And to go with that, following on from what Theo has shared this morning in communion around God's love for us and the spirit of reconciliation that is what he has in his heart for each of us. And in acknowledgement, well, following on from that spirit of reconciliation, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri as the traditional custodians of the land on which we gather today. Their elders, past, present, and emerging. And in thinking around the importance of that in sharing of reconciliation, I'd like to acknowledge the elders of Gisborne Church of Christ, past, some who are not with us anymore, but quite a number who are spread through our congregation this morning. Our elders present, Leonie, Mark Leach, and Jen Van Groningen, and Judith. And I'd like to acknowledge our elders who are emerging. They'll be part of this church. If they're not part of this church, they'll be part of the body of Christ in this district, this nation, this planet. And if you don't know who they are, if you haven't seen them at work, come tonight at 6:30, and you will, that's for sure. I've had three God moments this week. The whole week's life is a God moment in the scheme of things, isn't it? But you stop, and at times you stop and you notice particular times when God is present in your life and when you are part of his works. And this is not part of my message actually, but this is just sharing a bit about what's happened this week. courtesy, I guess it's a bit of a COVID hangover, is a bit of an itchy throat at times, and it turns into a bit of a coughing fit, which means I need to walk out the door and alleviate everybody who's there from the pain of watching me cry and cough. At work on Thursday morning, I felt an itch developing. I was in a little meeting with my boss and with my co-workers and colleagues, and I thought, nah, my boss actually saw me tearing up. She said, are you right? I said, yeah. And so I just walked out and walked downstairs and went downstairs and had a bit of a coughing fit, which is all well and good. And then while I was down there, my phone rang, and it was Oscar. And if I was in the meeting, I wouldn't have answered the phone. But it was a chance just to share with him with some good news in his workplace. And I thank God for creating a moment for me to be able to participate in real time rather than listening to a message and ringing him back. We're able to share in that at the time. Second one, a friend of mine from... We've been friends for 40 years. We probably actually only lived next to and close to each other for about first eight years of that, but we've maintained contact for all that time. And about a month ago, I touched base with him, and he was leaving work after where he'd been for a long time. And it came to my mind just to give him a call, touch base, and see how he was going because he'd left his job. And he said, oh no, I haven't actually left, I'm leaving this week. But tomorrow I've got a conversation with the owners of the business about participating in ownership. And I had a sense of God just tapping me on the shoulder. You know, it was the right time to touch base with him again and be part of that experience of him and moving in his own life and affirming him and his own values and the way in which he has sought to strengthen himself. Touched base again yesterday morning, and yeah, it's all gone swimmingly. He's someone who used to come to Sunday school with me, Sunbury Salvation Army, and he has that background. And I trust that he'll see a sense of God in his life in that. And the third one, similar, a friend who I've been. Who has moved up to or out of the state, and he's been on my mind. And on, I think Wednesday night, I just sent him a text and said, how you going? You know, you're free for a chat. And we had a quick chat. And he was on his way down to Melbourne. And it turns out he was just doing a blitz trip down to Melbourne. Drove down on Thursday, hung around Friday, drove back on Saturday. And there, it was just that, again, that sense of responding to a moment, a quiet tap on the shoulder, now's the time to ring. And so I touched base with him. Michael probably saw me texting on my phone this morning while worship practice instead of participating, but it was another moment of being the presence of God in someone else's life. And so I didn't tell him I was going to talk about this, but I said to him, hey, you know, that was a God moment for me. And he's come back and he said it was a really, it was an important moment for him to have that contact with me. And he said it was serendipitous. And when you're a Christian, you don't believe in serendipity. You believe in the hand of God. You believe in the movement of God putting you in the right place at the right time. And when you respond to that moment, things happen. And he's asked, oh, so he's now asked, I'd like to talk to you about that. When that'll happen, I don't know, but the time will come. And I forgot to look what time I started. But now it's 10 to 11 under the pump. Right, so moving on. This year, I've been reading some of the, bit like Morris in the Old Testament, and reading sort of some of the shorter shorter stories and things in the Old Testament. So this morning, I've got what some people would consider a tall tale, what some people might consider a long tale, but hopefully it's a tale that... I was going to go into a wedding party's anything song title then, wasn't I? No, a tale you won't believe. Not the case. A tale that you will believe. As people who know me, I'm a bit of a crier. I'm trying not to get there today. I've already done that. And also, I like old books. So I'm going to start this morning with an old book. Anybody know Spurgeon? Now, this book was written in 1873. Has an inscription in the front from 1877. And I can't say I've read it all. But it's certainly one that you could be Bible bashed with. This weekend's actually rather an interesting weekend in the scheme of things. Sass's birthday tomorrow. I'm pretty sure it was this weekend that John Randalls got baptised. I remember that very closely because I was part of that baptism. It was the weekend before Paul Crothers actually started his time here. And this book, printed nearly 150 years ago, the reading for June the 26th is from Kings chapter 14. And I'll just read this little bit, which is a bit of an intro for me. In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria, and reigned 41 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. He restored the coast of Israel from the entering of Hamath unto the sea of the plain, according to the word of the Lord, according to the word of the Lord God of Israel, which he spake by the hand of his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, which was of Gath Hepher. Now, I don't know why, maybe I do, when I got asked to give a message, it was Jonah that came, the story of Jonah that came to mind. And I love the affirmation of picking up a 150-year-old book and knowing that the day's reading from 150 years ago was today gives me a sense of comfort that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, even if I don't understand why. So this is Jonah. So if you've got your Bibles, you know, you could pull it out. Or if you've got your phone. Otherwise, you know, this is a way of taking notes, keeping a record, your own record. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." The word of the Lord came to Jonah. The word of the Lord comes to each of us in lots of different ways, in small ways, little messages. Give somebody a call. In big ways, I want you to go and be a missionary in some other place. I want you to be a prophet and share stories of the future for the people that I love. But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. It's a big ask, fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he is with us. He's in us. He goes with us. We take him to wherever we go. Now, Tarshish, so he was in Israel, up near Nazareth. He went to Joppa, which is now Tel Aviv, to catch a boat to Tarshish, which is somewhere, there's lots of speculation about where Tarshish is. But there's a sense that it's at the end, east, the western end of the Mediterranean. So that's like trying to go to Perth from Melbourne to escape God. Except it would have been in a little boat, a little ship, and it would have stopped in lots of places on the way, and it would have taken quite a number of weeks to get there. So he paid the fare. Not sure whether I need my glasses or not. Maybe not. He paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. It's a bit like dog and your friend. You save your own life or keep the cargo. Because if you live and get to the other end and you haven't got the cargo, you'll be in trouble. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. This is a story that sort of repeats a few times through the Bible, particularly in the context of Paul, the apostle, on his way to Rome. And Jesus, who was on the Sea of Galilee, in a ship, in a fishing boat with his disciples, and a storm came up, and they're experienced mariners, and they're distressed, and they're concerned, and they're fearful of their life, because they know that the storm is on the edge of what the ship can handle. And Jesus is asleep. And here we have Jonah asleep. Why would he be asleep? Is he tired? I mean, he's running away, so he's probably moved fairly quickly from where he was to get to the ship. Does he have peace? Because he knows he's running away from God. It's a bizarre thing. Is he just fooling himself? He's just going, "Oh, no, I'll be right. She'll be right. Don't have to worry about this. I've got my life in my own hands. God's asked me to do something, but that doesn't matter. I can get away from that. God won't be able to find me." The captain came down and said to him, "What do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish." And the story goes through. And they cast lots because they didn't want to believe Jonah when Jonah said, "Oh no, it's my fault. It's because God is chasing me that this tempest is upon us." He says, "Pick me up and hurl me down into the sea, and the sea will quiet down for you." They didn't believe him, so they started rowing, trying to get the ship back under control, the see and get to where they needed to be. And then finally, they relented. Let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you. So they picked him up, hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased and was quiet. The people who were around Jonah, the people who were not of God, but part of God's plan and in the right place at the right time, hurled him into the sea. And the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Again, another wonderful parallel to salvation and reconciliation of ourselves to God through his love. And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon the land 3 days later, after Jonah had said a little prayer, which is not too surprising in the dark and the smell and the cold and the wet of a fish's belly. It vomited Jonah out. It wasn't just a little spit. It wasn't just a little cough, because he had an itchy throat with Jonah stuck in his throat. It wasn't a little chuck. It was a vomit. It was an all-out projectile vomit of this man just being spat out of the fish through the air onto the dry land. What I wanted to do from this was just share a couple of my moments of fleeing the presence of God, of the word of the Lord coming upon me, and then what I did with that until the time came where I was spat out onto the dry land. And I think that's an experience that we all have, and it's something powerful to reflect on if it was a past thing, and it's something that's an interesting thing to reflect on if you're in that space now, because you haven't escaped from the presence of the Lord. He's with you. And just as Jonah went through the storm and went through the belly of the fish, God is still with you in this space. And he has his hand on your life, even if you choose not to recognize it. And he's moving you towards that place of reconciliation and that place of love where you acknowledge that you are in his presence. One for me was the question of being baptized. So it was probably my early, how old was I then? Early 20s, and there was a sense of, you know, there was teaching about baptism, and there was the questions and the call from the pastor, Charles Lazaro, down at Sunbury Baptist Church to be baptized. And I thought, oh, look, I can go halfway. I can make the pastor happy by joining in his course and doing his teaching around baptism over a period of 10 weeks. And then when I get to the end, I can just say, no, it's not the right time. So I went to the course and then did the readings and did the homework and did the prayer time and sitting in the small group talking about being baptized and why it's important and what it does for you as an individual and your relationship with God. And I got to the end of the 10 weeks and said, no, I'm not doing it. I don't need to do it. This is not the right time for me. I'll worry about it another day if I need to. Shortly after that, Nikki and I went to England for a year and America for a year. So it was, you know, it was a bit like escaping. I was away from the pastor. I wasn't there every Sunday morning where he could remind me that he'd asked me to be baptized. And I'd said no. I was in the belly of the fish, but God was with me, and we got to England, and I was involved in a course at a military college, and there was a month-long sort of induction process, and the international student's well-being person was a pastor, a local chaplain at a local AOG church. And so straight away, we were connected into the presence of God. and we found ourselves attending this church for that 12 months and continuing to be immersed in his presence, even though I thought I'd managed to run away. It's probably another 5-6 years of being in the belly of the fish, of dealing with this question of being baptized or not. And finally the time came, it was shortly before Ray Smith left, and I thought, now's the time. And I felt myself being spat out onto dry land and in a position of peace because I'd made the decision to be baptized. And for me, the freedom that came from that decision has been astounding in my own personal walk with Christ. I didn't feel an enormous revelation at the time, but what I felt was a sense of no longer could I be attacked by Satan around this question of baptism. I'd been obedient and I'd followed the path that God had laid out for me. And it was no longer a weapon that could be used against me. Instead, it was something that I could turn around on now and be able to move forward with. The other one is a personal expression of worship. And this is about raising hands in worship, my own expression of honour and love and praise back to God. Salvation Army doesn't do that sort of stuff, especially not through the 90s. The Sunbury Baptist Church didn't do it, that's for sure. The other Christian organisations and groups that I was part of and connected to, that was not part of how they expressed love for God. And I'd say my belly of the fish moment was probably going to Hillsong with the Adams. And I liken it to the belly of the fish because it was dark. You go into those big auditoriums, 15,000 people, I don't know, however many, lots. And it was dark and it was noisy, like the fish tummy grumbling as it's processing and digesting food. But it was powerful. I was in the presence of God. And the moment came for me where I just fell to my knees. And from that had a sense of freedom around worship and expression with hands. For me that was, it was just a wonderful moment of going, after having gone through all the pain of thinking about it and considering it, going the pros and cons and what will people think and what will my wife think. It does matter. And it's something that I've really enjoyed expressing myself that way. And the Lord spoke to the fish and it vomited Jonah out upon the land. Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, just to confirm, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it the message that I tell you. And here I'd just like to, part of the amazing things that have, moments of testimony and sharing that we've had here over the last 6 months or so are quite, the week before I was supposed to talk, Peter shared his testimony and Helen shared her testimony at the evening service. And I came away from those two services with a profound sense that the timing for me to speak the next week was just right. Because these were stories of people who in very different ways had been touched. The word of the Lord had come to them. One about future in terms of being in a position of influence, and one testimony of you are loved. Be with me, walk with me. And the strength to take on those words, to acknowledge them as words from God, to take them on, to commit to those, and to follow through with that. Arise, go to the place that I've called you to, and do the thing that I've asked you to. Seems silly, the amazing revelation I've had about doing this is that this story applies to me. I've read Jonah many times. It's a story that we grow up on in Sunday school. But I've never had a sense of it actually applying to me. It seems bizarre. So thank you for asking me to preach and have this come. So I think at that time we'll have the worship team come up. And they can start playing. We'll see how we go. I wanted just to go back to the prayer that Jonah said in the fish. Not the whole thing, but so this is Jonah chapter 2, verse 7. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you, the Lord, into your holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. When you trust in faith, as Josh talked about last week in his message here on Sunday morning, about stories of faith and stories of trust, it starts with a trust that the word of the Lord does come to you, that he has something for you, big and small. I've probably come at the same time. But trust in those, because salvation belongs to our God.